outside is a different deal. It's just sharing a lot. City Council will come back from recess. Carly, can you please read the title for time certain? Item number 1113. It's a resolution.
Authorize city attorney to appeal an order issued by the Employment Relations Board in Portland Police Association v. City of Portland, UP 02312.
I'd like to introduce the city attorney, Jim Van Dyke, to explain what's before us today.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Jim Van Dyke, city attorney. What's before you today is a resolution authorizing the city attorney's office to go ahead and appeal a decision of the Employment Relations Board that was reached in the case of Portland Police Association versus City of Portland, which, as you know, had to do with the city's firing of Officer Freshour that went to arbitration. City appealed that decision to the Employment Relations Board. The Employment Relations Board held against the city, but we believe there are important public policy issues as well as the correct interpretation of state law that requires us to go forward and seek an appeal in this case. That is the particular, Mayor. Do you want me to go into any detail about that?
For the record, having at the time serving in city government but in a different capacity for a number of legislative sessions under state legislative sessions while Mayor Vera Katz was mayor and I worked for her following the Erickson shooting, we worked on legislative fixes to exactly the kinds of situations or similar to the situations that we have faced with former Officer Freshour. And so if you could explain, it's an important public policy point. Granted, labor law is very complex, but if you wouldn't mind for the record, sort of just putting it on the record, the details.
I'd be glad to. The point of the city's appeal to the Employment Relations Board had to do with a provision of state law that's an exception to the usual arbitration process. As you know, arbitration is usually a final and binding process. However, there is an exception in state law.
And if I could pause you?
Sure.
We have Commissioner Leonard, who's teleconferencing in. We have him on the phone, and so I need to read the following. Sorry for interrupting. Pursuant to Portland City Code 3.02.025, Commissioner Randy Leonard is participating via telephone because he is on vacation, and having his participation is important for consideration of this particular issue. Is there any member of council or anyone that wishes to object to him participating via telephone? Let the record note, no objections were made, and Commissioner Leonard will continue to participate via teleconferencing. Commissioner Leonard, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed, Attorney Van Dyke.
Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Leonard. I was about to explain that the issue before the Employment Relations Board and the issue that would be before the Oregon Court of Appeals concerns a statute in state law that is an exception to the usual arbitration process. As I mentioned, arbitration is usually a final and binding process. However, state law has an exception that says, as a condition of enforceability for an arbitration award, any award that orders the reinstatement of a public employee or otherwise relieves the public employee of responsibility for misconduct shall comply with public policy requirements as clearly defined in statutes or judicial decisions, including but not limited to policies regarding sexual harassment or sexual misconduct, unjustified and egregious use of physical or deadly force, and serious criminal misconduct related to work. Now, when we went back and looked at the legislative history that surrounds this provision of the statute, we find that it was adopted in 1995 as a result, in part, of the decision, an arbitration decision in the city of Portland involving Officer Douglas Erickson. Officer Erickson had been chasing a suspect, and in the course of chasing a suspect, had discharged his weapon approximately 20, 22 times. He was disciplined as a result of that conduct. The arbitrator relieved him of responsibility for that conduct. The arbitrator found he had not engaged in any misconduct at all, in fact, and relieved him and of the discipline that had been imposed. And when this matter went before the legislature, the sponsor of the measure, that portion of the statute that I just read, which was Senator Neil Bryant, stood before the legislature and said that we are introducing this part of the statute to change the result in that Portland arbitration decision. That was in 1995. We come forward to today. We have a very similar situation. We have a police officer who was disciplined as a result of engaging in excessive force, and in this case, deadly force. We have an arbitration decision that, again, relieved the officer of misconduct, and in fact, just like the Erickson decision, found that the officer had not engaged in any misconduct whatsoever. We believe that this statute applies in this situation, and that is the reason that we went forward to the Employment Relations Board and said this arbitration decision should not stand, that this is a condition of its enforceability, and that it has to comply with policies regarding the use of physical or deadly force. The Employment Relations Board, and we presented this legislative history to the Employment Relations Board, and I think for the first time provided them with information that showed that what Senator Bryant was referring to was the very situation in Portland regarding Officer Erickson. I'm not sure if before they had known that Officer Erickson had been completely relieved of responsibility in that particular decision. Having presented them with that information, unfortunately, we did not receive a good decision. In fact, the Employment Relations Board restated the test that it has used for the last several years, many years, regarding this provision of the statute. It relied on Oregon case law, where Oregon cases had not considered that particular provision of the legislative history. Therefore, we think it's important, not only as a matter in this case, but as a matter of general policy, to get this matter before the Oregon courts. As the Employment Relations Board acknowledged in its opinion, its legal test, its interpretation of this particular statute, has never been considered by the Oregon Court of Appeals or the Oregon Supreme Court. It's not been accepted, it's not been rejected, but it's never been considered whatsoever. We need to get this in front of them so that they can take a fresh look at this statute, a fresh look at the legislative history, and provide us with guidance.
Initial questions from counsel, and our city attorney will stick around for the duration of the hearing. But we've kept people waiting. I appreciate your patience. So if we could go to public testimony. And given the lateness of the day, you'll have your full 3 minutes. But if you can make it shorter, that's good too.
We have 9 people sign up. The first 4, please come on up, are Wa Nichols, Peter Parks, Joe Walsh, and Reverend Leroy Haynes.
Welcome. Thanks for waiting. Would you like to begin, sir?
Sure. My name is Walt Nichols. I'm an avid supporter of community policing, been active in neighborhood associations, and active in Southeast Precinct and East Precinct. I strongly support this, and I hope that you will all agree to go forward. This issue has struck me to the core of morally wrong what transpired. I've had lengthy conversations with then Commander Chief Reese, offended at the fact that the officer was then put into the position as a NERD officer when we were trying to do outreach to get minorities involved after this issue took place. I'm deeply concerned that even today our police training isn't happening. I've had two incidences recently where I've had officers on my front porch as a neighborhood watch block captain where I've had more facts and knowledge than the police officer that was responding to the issue. One of the situations that just took place, which isn't really related to this other than the lack of training, is the fact that because of the officer's misconduct, it resolved in a domestic abuse violence and retaliation against myself. So we have to focus on training and full training and stop cutting the budgets that do it. And morally, we have a responsibility to challenge this law because there's no corporation in America that would tolerate what took place with Fresh Hour. Thank you.
Doctor?
Once again, I am the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, chairperson of the Obama Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. On behalf of the coalition, I come today to speak in support of the decision of the council and urging them to appeal the decision to restore Officer Ron Freshour to duty in the Portland Police Bureau. I urge the city commissioners to fight the decision to restore Officer Ron Freshour to his duties as a Portland police officer by challenging it in the court. This decision to restore Officer Freshour has a greater implication than just restoring an individual officer to his duties. It raises the question in a democratic society on whether the elected democratic representatives in the Portland City Council have authority over a paramilitary organization in the Portland Police Bureau. A hallmark of the American democracy is the belief in civilian control over the military and law enforcement. This principle, I must say, is worthy of our elected representatives to fight for. Secondly, Officer Ron Freshour should never patrol on the streets of the city of Portland. His judgment of shooting an unarmed, distressed man surrendering is a mockery of everything that is fair and just in our moral values as a community and the fundamental principles of a justice system. His presence as an officer patrolling the streets of Portland would create fear in every mother that has a mentally ill son or daughter. I thank you for this time.
Thank you, Doctor. Mr. Walsh?
My name is Joe Walsh, and I'm representing Individuals for Justice. We applaud you considering this appeal to the appellate court. We think that you should take this into the courts and let them decide the issue of whether you have a right to fire a police officer. To a civilian, it's kind of straight up. You should have that right. I would have a request, though. Actually, two. In this instance, we agree with what we think you're going to do. And the reason that we think you're going to do this action is some of you have a habit of announcing your positions prior to any public input. That's annoying. I would really like to feel that our testimony has something to do with your final decision. If you say you're going to do something before I testify, it takes all of the wind out of my sails when I come here. This is not the first time that some of you have made statements to the press. My second request is that you think about Plan B. The appellate courts, I was a chief union steward for the IBEW for 15 years and handled federal arbitrations. Federal and normal judges, state judges, do not like overturning arbitrators. You may win this case, and I hope you do, because I think you're right. Think about this plan B. You have a right to assign. If you lose this case, assign that man to a desk with super glue. He will never be able to move from that desk.
Thank you, sir. Your time's up. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Peter Parks. I live at 5728 North Wilbur. I've protested many times on the street with the Albina Ministerial Alliance of abuses of the police department in various cases having to do particularly with the black community and other people of color and people who are challenged in various ways. And this case seems very clear to most citizens, and I applaud the resolution that's being considered here today, and I hope that all of you vote in favor of it to get this on the record as a court case. So that's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, very much. Next four.
Are Ann Brayfield, Dan Handelman, Will Atchison, and Roger David Hardesty.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for your patience. Would you like to begin?
Yes. My name is Ian Brayfield. I'm a concerned citizen from Southwest Portland and have been following these sorts of issues pretty consistently over the last 2 years. And I want to say thank you very much for your willingness to entertain this resolution and for your so far stated positions that you will support taking this to appeal. I think it's time, probably beyond time, that this kind of thing happen. I think we have courts of law to deal with these kinds of issues, and I hope that it'll be taken seriously and thoughtfully considered. And I also hope that all of you will continue to look at the issues that keep coming up around training, because that's part of how we've gotten here today in this case. And you know, to read, if it is the case, that in 2005 and in 2009, recommendations were made about how use of deadly force cases are reviewed and were, I guess, basically ignored. And here we are again today, and now under the DOJ investigation, I hope that all of you will consider how it can be that we can solve this problem of reviewing things that happen, but even better yet, how can we train and how can we staff ourselves so that we don't have these kinds of incidents? And I'm going to ask you to seriously consider, again, the Memphis plan and where Portland was going prior to Mayor Potter disbanding crisis intervention. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Handelman.
Yes, Ms. Murray, did you say 3 minutes or just try to make it in 2 minutes? Folks?
I have a feeling that you would like 3 minutes.
I would.
Absolutely.
That's possible. I'd like some feedback on my idea, too. Oh, yeah. Mr. Mayor and Council, I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and I'm kind of pleased to be sitting next to Mr. Atchison here. We've been at many meetings together. I know we don't agree on a lot of things. But I think one thing that we probably do agree on is that officers, anybody who's employed has a right to collectively bargain for their rights to fair wages, to a safe workplace, and to good health benefits. I think that's probably something we agree on. Probably where we diverge is whether or not that collective bargaining agreement should set public policy, and I think that's where the PPA has stepped over the line many times in the last couple of decades that Portland Cop Watch has been around. And we know that the collective bargaining agreement, for instance, prohibits anybody except for a police officer from asking questions in an administrative investigation about what happened during an incident where the misconduct might have taken place. And we're hoping that that will be removed in the next round of arbitration. arbitration, of negotiations. And I also am fairly certain that Mr. Aitchison's clients, the police association, are going to raise the question of how much money it's costing the city to file this appeal. And when you compare that to the tens of thousands of dollars that we know Officer Frashour has cost the city from at least the case with Mr. Waterhouse and his camcorder, where Mr. Frashour used a taser, and officers like Leo Besner, who've cost the city $1 million or more in lawsuits, and all the other excessive force cases where we, the community, would like to see these officers reined in, disciplined, or fired. I think that this is worth the investment up front to save the money later. So we very much support the idea of appealing this to the court on principle, if nothing else. We do hope that you prevail, and there's more than just Officer Frashour. You've heard this already, but there's more than just Officer Frashour at stake. It is the question of who gets a say when an officer gets to stay on the force or not. And I would support Mr. Walsh's proposal that if Frashour gets ordered back on, that he gets assigned to a desk job. I also think that it's possible that he should understand people in the community don't want him on the force, and maybe if he does get reinstated, that he will consider resigning and stop being a police officer here in the city of Portland.
Thank you, Mr. Handelman. Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. Might I have the 3 minutes?
Absolutely.
I am speaking on behalf of the Portland Police Association. My name is Will Aitchison, and I'm a long, long time Portland resident. I want to talk to you for a moment about binding arbitration. We entered into our first collective bargaining agreement with you almost 50 years ago. Binding arbitration was a feature of that agreement. We entered into an agreement with you, both of us, to use binding arbitration as a dispute resolution mechanism in the contract for several reasons: that it was more inexpensive, that it was faster, and in particular, that we could bring expertise, the expertise of labor arbitrators, to issues concerning the interpretation of our contract. We have not used binding arbitration much over those 47 years that we have had a contract. We've used it less than once a year. And as all of you know, binding arbitration of disciplinary cases is extraordinarily rare. I haven't seen the statistics, but in the 32 years I've represented the Portland Police Association, I guess we have arbitrated less than 1% of the disciplinary cases that you have issued. This is an arbitration process that we have respected. In this case, we did not get an arbitrator through a state list. You proposed the arbitrator, Jane Wilkinson. She's not an inexperienced arbitrator. She's a member of the National Academy of Arbitrators. She's been arbitrating for 30 years. She's the former head of Washington's Public Employment Relations Commission. We had the fairest of hearings that we could have. We had 16 days of trial. We heard from 31 witnesses. We have thousands of pages of transcripts and tens of thousands of pages of exhibits that the arbitrator considered. And the arbitrator heard from witnesses whose testimony hasn't been detailed in the press, heard from every single police officer and sergeant at the scene, and all of them were asked one question that the Bureau never asked them in its investigation: was Officer Frashour's use of force in compliance with city policy? And all 11 of those men and women, with a collective of hundreds of years of experience, answered the question, yes, he complied with the city's rules. The arbitrator also heard from every defensive tactics instructor in the Bureau, and some who were Officer Frashour's trainers who are no longer on the Bureau but are well-respected, like Officer Mike Stradley. All of those 11 were asked a question the Bureau never asked them: was Officer Frashour's conduct in accordance with his training? And every one of them answered the question, yes. We heard from eyewitnesses who thought that a gun battle was about to erupt. We heard from expert witnesses who have represented the city of Portland in the past.
Your time's up. Thank you. Sir, thanks for waiting.
My name is Roger David Hardesty, and just hit the button. Oh, sorry. Hi, my name is Roger David Hardesty, and I favor continued appeal of this arbitration. The term million-dollar cops, when used to describe Portland police officers like Fresh Hour, is not a reflection on their value to law enforcement. It is used even among serving officers to describe fellow cops who cost us so very much. In addition to the lives lost and physical damages that are sustained when police do wrong, we divert other resources as well. Some of those resources are financial. I support wholeheartedly financial expenditures that appeal a flawed arbitration panel whose findings do not embrace human rights. Courts will find that no matter how you are trained, no matter what provisions a city has negotiated with its union, Fresh Hour's behavior was grievously wrong. Also reflected in the price of million-dollar cops should be the cost of running early intervention systems that identify poor performers. The city of Portland should bear the costs of efficacious employee management. Some officers attain million-dollar status on the installment plan. When time and time again, poor performance requires we fund investigations, pay legal defense for our errant employees, and when the DOJ calls a self-defeating accountability system fails to effectively discipline an officer, the city pays when it loses public trust. Please hire change agents to come into this bureau and use tools of proven effective elsewhere to identify cops who are in the $10,000 stage of their careers. The defense of I was doing what I was told means we must address the cost of failed training. Flawed policies that have hampered good policing for a dozen years since the relationship between training and poor outcomes was first brought to the City Council's attention. An early intervention system is meaningless unless the police bureau know how to change the behavior that an EIS has identified. Employ a change agent to bring to this bureau proven methodologies that will help us emerge from the subterfuge that underlies Fresh Hour's position. You have the wrong people in charge of training, given their weight in determining who gets disciplined. We currently pay a cost for training division that bucks command. New facilities with the same staff will crank out officers who lack sufficient concern that they'll be held accountable. When a sniper removes his earpiece, he removes himself from a chain of command. No amount of dinkering with policy, no amount of training can remedy an individual's go-it-alone attitude to abandon higher authority. You need to hire a change agent with a track record of working with systems and tools to change a police culture that fires whistleblowers and condones defiance to discipline, that condones noncompliance in reporting. Don't listen to groups who say justice is too expensive. Spend what it takes to impose discipline when your employee violates a man's most vital civil right. Consider how much the next mortal failing will cost the self-insured city. Take that $1.5 million and hire the police union negotiator. He's doing an excellent job. The next city council must risk their own political capital and walk away from the deficiencies in a union contract that prevent the discipline required in a martial force. Let's improve the value we receive
your time's
from
up,
law
sir.
Enforcement.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Anyone else signed up?
The last person who signed up is Joanne Hardesty.
Anyone else wish to testify that did not sign up? Now is your opportunity.
Mr. Mayor, do
Mr.
any
Hardesty.
Members of the
Ms.
council
Hardesty.
Have questions?
No. You can return to your seat.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council members. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Joanne Hardesty, and I'm here to support your resolution to continue your efforts to keep Fresh Hour off the Portland police force. It should be clear to the general public by now that serious problems exist and must be fixed within the Portland Police Bureau. It is not acceptable that the Bureau continues to resist putting specific policies in place that protect the public from inappropriate use of force. It is no longer acceptable that the Bureau fails to thoroughly review and then correct behavior that has led to the death of too many of our community. Too many have paid with their lives, and we, the taxpayers, pay with our tax dollars. The DOJ recently completed investigations into the patterns and practices of Portland police, which provides the public the clearest picture to date just how internal review processes cover the butt of officers that act inappropriately in their interactions with the public. The self-defeating accountability system, as it was labeled by the DOJ, actually works as intended. It works to frustrate the public into not seeking redress for wrongdoing by our police force. It ensures that the police can claim they did not learn from past mistakes, since so far they haven't made any. The PPA and the Portland police chief continue to say publicly that no Portland police officer has ever done anything wrong, which continues to reinforce the arrogant assumption that they are not accountable to the public they serve. It is inconceivable that a sniper who removed his earpiece could hear what was happening at a distant scene. and could be found acting within policy. Officers that were closer to the scene didn't use deadly force. What message does Fresh Hour's reinstatement convey to other officers, like the negotiator who lured Aaron Campbell out of his apartment under the pretext of a welfare check? Several officers and supervisors still need to be held accountable for the total breakdown in communication and strategic thinking that happened that night. The fact that the other punishments, as weak as they were, have already been overturned through your arbitration process confirms the current system is set up to protect all officers, no matter their crime. Nice, another officer exonerated in excessive force cases, is now back on the street in East Portland. My neighbors and I do not feel safe knowing that if we call the police, the responding officer might come with the invincible attitude that he can do no wrong. If you allow Fresh Hour to return to duty, you can rest assured that calls to the Portland police will be made only after the person in need considers the risk that someone not engaged in criminal activity may come to great harm. Will calls for help be drastically reduced? If the community is faced with rolling the dice on who will respond to their call for assistance, some may choose not to make that call. Since I only have 9 seconds left, I'm skipping to my last paragraph. On October 12, 2012, you will enter into an agreement with the Department of Justice.
And I have to treat everyone the same, and your time is up. Thank you. We've got your written testimony. We can read your last two paragraphs. Unless there's anyone else that wishes to testify, Carla, would you please call the vote? All right. This will be our last testifier. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, my name is Laura Van Tosh, and I'm a fairly new resident to Portland. I'm a person who was in recovery from mental illness, and I just want to support the council's decision to proceed and obtain all the facts to make the right decision in this case. I've had dealings with the police outside of Portland and other places where I've lived, and I think it's terribly important that they get proper training, including from people with mental illness, so that they can learn the best ways to interact with people like me and others that want to be in recovery and get their lives back on track. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony. Appreciate it. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
So can you hear me okay?
Yes, a little louder. We can hear you, Commissioner.
Okay. I want to, if you don't mind, just take a moment to go over the facts of the case and then explain how I got to the place that I did to support what for me is an unusual position to appeal. Not just an arbitrator's decision, but now the Employment Relations Board decision, much for the reasons in the past, as Will Aitchison said in his testimony. I do believe that a contract is a contract, but I also believe that there are times when a contract can actually violate a larger controlling law, which I have come to conclude in this case. I think it's important to understand that when this incident occurred, the officer in charge of the scene, who was the sergeant, actually considered it such a minor incident that at one point she considered disbanding the officers on the scene and leaving Mr. Campbell on his own. Unfortunately, she didn't do that, and a negotiator persuaded Mr. Campbell to come out pursuant to his directions. But before that happened, the incident commander, the sergeant, had actually left the scene. And in incidents like this, you have to have an incident commander, and it is a violation of basic training protocol to leave the scene as the incident commander without appointing somebody else as the incident commander or the person in charge of the incident. That wasn't done. So when the negotiator asked Mr. Campbell to come out with his hands behind his head, he did exactly what he was told to do. He came out with his hands behind his head. However, that wasn't broadcast to other officers on the scene. So as Mr. Campbell walked out backwards as instructed, he had his hands behind his head. However, other officers that had shotgun beanbags at their disposal told him to put his hands over his head. For a variety of reasons that I think many of us could imagine, Mr. Campbell kept walking backwards with his hands behind his head, not over his head. As a result, they shot him multiple times with beanbags. And he did what most any of us, either there sitting in the audience or anywhere listening on TV, would do. He ran after being shot in the back with beanbags for what must have been to him no reason at all. He was doing exactly as he was told. And that was the justification given for fatally shooting Mr. Campbell in the back with an AR-15 rifle. Including in that incident, simultaneous with Mr. Campbell being shot in the back with the beanbags, another officer, a canine officer, had unleashed a dog to take down Mr. Campbell. Now, even that, to me, seemed to be an overreaction, given Mr. Campbell was complying with the hostage negotiator's instruction. But be that as it may, Officer Frashar wasn't even aware a dog had been unleashed because, as a couple of your testifiers have stated, he removed his earpiece. He didn't know what was happening around him on the scene. Literally, the right hand did not know what the left hand was doing in this incident that should have been handled at a very low level and successfully. As a result, we have paid out as a city already $1.2 million to Mr. Campbell's family. Included, or in addition to that, the grand jury hearing testimony on the shooting took the, what I think, and there may be other examples, I don't recall if there are, they took the unusual step of writing a letter in which, and this is a quote, they said they were outraged at the Portland Police Bureau's actions that led to Aaron Campbell's shooting death, a quote from their letter. And in my experience, in a nearly unprecedented, and in fact, I don't think nearly unprecedented, just a flat unprecedented statement by a top uniformed Portland Police Bureau commander, who said, after reviewing the sworn testimony by Portland Police Bureau officers from the arbitration, that he was sickened by what he heard. That what he heard in sworn testimony by some Portland Police Bureau training officers sounded like a, and I quote here, rehearsed union story, unquote. The assistant chief said on the record that he was so upset by his training officer's testimony that he considered actually retiring from the Portland Police Bureau. I also want to make it clear, I've spent most of my adult life defending the rights of working people, and not just as a union president, which I was for 12 years at the Portland Fire Bureau, but as a member of the Oregon State Senate, a member of the Oregon House, and I think whether my colleagues agree with me or not on issues I take, they would agree I've been pretty consistent, whether it's in executive sessions on collective bargaining rights or public sessions on the rights of people to organize or bargain collectively. I have uniformly and maybe even at times to a fault defended the right of working people. And in spite of the facts of the Campbell case that I just went through, I think that I will have to admit that I was stuck in the weeds of the technical aspects of Oregon Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act, commonly called PECPA, and that being the law that this council today, by our vote, seeks to have interpreted differently by the Oregon Court of Appeals as it applies to this case. But it was the recent public comments by the Portland Police Association that caused me to realize that there really is a bigger picture that I need to consider in this case. When the PPA president ignores community outrage, unprecedented grand jury outrage, a $1.2 million settlement with Mr. Campbell's family for his wrongful death, and even ignores the unprecedented outrage expressed by the Portland Police Bureau's own top commanders, but instead makes outrageous personal attacks against the mayor and also against a highly respected former Portland Police Association president who testified that the shooting of Mr. Campbell was not consistent with PPP training, I felt like, as I do now, that I needed to change my focus. And I think something needs to change in the Portland Police Bureau. And maybe this is the path that we have to take to get there. And if that's the case, then so be it. And Mayor Adams, thank you for your patience and your leadership on this, and for doing something that I don't often do, persuading me to change my mind. Aye.
Ritz?
Mr. Campbell's death has been tragic and heart-wrenching for all of us, and especially for his family. And I honor and acknowledge the courage, especially of Aaron's mom, in urging us to continue pursuing this case. Her courage in keeping this wound open in the course of the pursuit of justice is very meaningful to me, and I thank the family for their support of this. And Aaron's death was a stark reminder that we have had far too many tragedies involving people with mental illnesses in our community, at 10 of the 12 while I've been on this council. And so, yes, we need changes in mental health care, and the mayor and I spent the morning with hospital providers and others looking at how can we fix our mental health care system, which has been broken for many decades. And we will indeed pursue that. A couple of weeks ago, we announced a new number that people can call if they're feeling suicidal or if their families are concerned about somebody who is suicidal. That number is a partnership with Lines for Life, a nonprofit partnership with healthcare professionals and volunteers who will take those calls and give advice and counseling for as long as it takes. And that number is 503-97-23456. So we encourage folks, if you are in a non-dangerous situation, to call that number. We will need to do policy changes. We will need to do training changes, and we have committed to doing that, $18 million for our new police training facility, a new training accountability committee to oversee what is done, the influence of the Office of Equity and Human Rights to look into how our officers are trained and who our officers are. All of those things should be done and will be done. The Department of Justice report is very clear that the independent police review process is not working, and I will be looking to the auditor for her leadership on how we are going to make significant changes in that system. All of those deficiencies must and will be corrected. We still need police accountability. When I was working as a nurse in a hospital, I had to follow the doctor's orders and I had to follow the hospital policies. I also had to act as a reasonably prudent nurse. And that is another standard of responsibility for the individual as well as following the institution's regulations. So as a city and a community, we must pursue all avenues, and we will. And still, the city council, the police commissioner, and the police chief must have disciplinary authority over the police bureau to protect public safety and that of all police officers. State law provides that arbitration decisions are not final or binding if the award violates public policies. The Employment Relations Board decided to uphold the arbiter's decision based on its understanding of this state law. The ERB admits that Oregon courts have not considered or accepted that interpretation. This appeal asks them to do that. And it is imperative that we give Oregon courts the opportunity to clarify what is meant. I've also asked the mayor to put on the priority list for the legislative agenda in the 2013 legislative session a clarification. If the law isn't clear, let's not wait for the courts to rule. Let's clarify the law. I said last week when I announced that I would probably support this appeal that I would consider all the evidence at the hearing, and that unless I heard compelling evidence to the contrary, that I would be supporting this appeal. Everything I've heard today affirms that. I also met with Officer Daryl Turner and listened to his concerns. I still believe that this appeal is the right thing to do. Aye.
Bish?
Well, I'm sorry Randy's not here for me to speak directly to him about his eloquent statement earlier, because much of what he said I not only agree with, but I thought the way in which he stated it was very eloquent and extremely thoughtful. And I want to begin by just acknowledging that I think between Randy and me, we have both been involved in labor relations for close to 50 years. So when Randy talks about some basic values that we share with our labor partners about our belief in the collective bargaining process and our general view towards alternative dispute resolution, arbitration in general, and final and binding arbitration. Randy, I think, said some very powerful things, which I agree with. That said, I think we have to be very clear at this hearing that this is not the action we're about to take, an attack on the collective bargaining process. And that's a diversion. This is not an attack on the collective bargaining process. And I think for anyone to suggest that this council has been somehow less than historically supportive of the rights of our employees to engage in lawful activity under state and federal law is missing the boat. Number two, I think it's important to say this is not an attack on the arbitral process. I practiced labor law for over 20 years, and I was involved in a number of cases where after an arbitrator's decision, either the union or management appealed the decision on either the ground that the arbitrator exceeded the scope of his or her authority or that the decision violated public policy. In fact, it is built into our process that even a decision which is final and binding can be challenged on very narrow grounds if the arbitrator did more than just get the facts wrong. And that is a safety valve which both management and unions in this state and city and across the country have historically used. So let's be clear, this is not an attack on arbitration. What this is, in my view, and I think Commissioner Fritz put it very well, this is a question of accountability. And there is a legal issue which we are going to test in the Court of Appeals, and it has to do with the public policy exception. Like Randy, I was skeptical at first because, having done this work for much of my adult life, I too am conditioned to see these exceptions in very narrow terms. But after talking to the city attorney and reviewing the law, I was persuaded that there is an important legal question that needs to be challenged at the next level. And as I said in my earlier statement, I recognize this is an uphill fight, and I have no illusions about this. This is a tough fight. And it is quite possible we will lose at the next level. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't take on this fight. And for those of us who believe that there was a fundamental defect in this arbitrator's decision, and for those of us who believe that it would be inappropriate to reinstate this officer, this is a lawful option that we have to contest this decision. So, after going through my own process, similar to Commissioner Leonard's, I too have concluded that this is the right step. And I will also say that I want to thank my mayor for the way he has handled this. He has been clear and consistent, and I too think some of the rhetoric has gotten way over the top. And we can disagree on things without personalizing our disagreements. In fact, that's what I've always found was the hallmark of successful labor relations. In fact, I think it's one of the reasons Will Aitchison has been so successful for so long. But we should be very careful about not personalizing our disputes. We have a principled position we are taking today. I applaud the mayor for his strong leadership, and I vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
The irrefutable fact is the law was changed. The state law was changed in 2004 to deal with these exact situations. And for the past 8 years, it's been missing in action from the entire process of labor code, labor law. It's just as if it never happened. And that wasn't the intent of 04. The 04 law, if you read the transcripts by Senator Deckert, was very clear, compelling. Some of us were around at that time. It was passed to make a difference. It was passed to give local control back on specific and selected cases. The fact that it's been ignored and admittedly not tested in the courts is what we're trying to address here. The 04 law has been ignored, and it's time for the courts to decide whether the fact that it's been ignored is legal. I do not believe it is. I believe in local control. We don't have enough, and this is necessary to find out exactly who's right. I want to thank my colleagues on the City Council for their willingness to engage on this issue. It's a very, very set of complex issues, and I want to thank them for their support. I also want to underscore my support for Clay Neal in my office and Sophia, who are on the public safety team, and a big underscore support for our city attorney, Jim Van Dyke. I really appreciate your work on this. We have a lot more work to do. Aye. So approved. We are adjourned.
Hey, gentlemen.